Welcome to the first recording of the Cavalry Series, a Velvel podcast project initiated in 2011. The Cavalry Series highlights the creative interests of those who are either new or emerging in either America or Scandinavia through a series of casual interviews, freestyle conversations, and ad hoc encounters. The Cavalry Series is interested in locating individuals who are directly responsible for the actual construction of an exhibition, project, or idea, but they may not be receiving proper attention. They're the foot soldiers of art making, yet they deserve to be seen as a cavalry. These talented trailblazers are often behind the scenes, unafraid to get their hands dirty, or taking risks. They are most often the driving force moving ideas forward. I'm Jacqueline Davis, recording from Stockholm. I'm here with Norwegian artist Kjersti Wetterstad to discuss her artistic process and to share her perspective. For more information about the artist, visit www.kjerstivetterstad.com. I've been aware of Kjersti Wetterstad's work since 2007. In a classroom setting, she shared her then-emerging project Mom and Jerry, but it's evolved since then. Video works, Be Free, Fuck It All, and the tribute to Mona Lisa stand apart for me. These are prime examples of why Wetterstad and Monica Winther by association deserve the Cavalry badge. In these videos, Wetterstad and Winther act as Mom and Jerry, a freakishly lowbrow street artist duo consisting of a questionable mom and clueless son who aspire to be successful contemporary artists and DJs, among other shady rebellious ambitions. They do what they want, mainly unaffected, and breeze their way through life, floating on a self-constructed delusion of grandeur. Together, they remind other quote-unquote real artists of what they simultaneously are and are not. They are pretenders pretending to one day make it big, and the viewer watches them grope towards fame with no clear plan. In Be Free, Fuck It All, Mom and Jerry are in the midst of a mother-son banter, walking through streets of Norway, taping the already silent mouths of mundane public statues shut, hanging gold medallions from their necks, which is cheap candy purchased from a convenience store. They then proceed to crash a Gardereid Einarsson opening, which is not staged. They walk into the vernissage and create an improvised spectacle, wearing paint-splattered hoodies, squatting on benches, which are part of Einarsson's work, despite the museum staff's insistence that they not be touched. A staff museum scolds Mom and Jerry. We can't have people here who don't respect the rules of the museum. They then proceed to loudly critique and bash the Norwegian artist's work, and respond by creating a new work, by taping the exhibition pamphlets to the museum floor, announcing its price to be some lofty amount, and declaring to an unassuming crowd that it's quote-unquote anarchy on sale. They then place gold medallions on their new work, a symbol as conflicted metaphor for value and meaning in the art world and art market at large. And Mom then states, "Don't we all fancy a little bit of anarchy?" Then they drunkenly careen from room to room, tagging a museum wall with their slogan, "Be free, fuck it all." They are caught by a docent who sheepishly watches them in shock, but doesn't really seem to know how to react. Mom and Jerry then walk away in the same oblivious haze which led them into the event. It's brilliant, because Mom and Jerry aren't oblivious at all. Rather, they are just not stained by a sick desire for acceptance and conformity. In a tribute to Mona Lisa, they roam around the Louvre making stoner comments about its perceived unplanned architecture and compare the Mona Lisa to Christ's crucifixion or a rock concert. Mom celebrates the tourist-driven spectacle by eating a chocolate-filled gold medallion that she wears as a kitschy Mardi Gras meets hip-hop accessory, a thread in reference to the same medallions from the aforementioned video. Witnessing the juxtaposition between these colorful raver personas and their high culture surroundings, it's addictive and fun. It is these risks, questioning the status quo, intervening with public spaces that only allow certain interactions to exist but completely mute other forms of expression, that in part embody the essence of the Cavalry. These are only some examples, but Wetterstad's strength appears to exist in the performative realm, the space between conventional and taboo, between the rational and absurd. Kjersti, you're based in three cities here in Europe, Oslo, Stockholm, and Berlin. Can you explain how these three places affect and influence your work as a Norwegian artist? Or do you feel that each city is merely a factor which is present, but not in any substantial way a part of your artistic process?
My work is not so much connected to the places I am, by coincidence that I've been working in Sweden the last year. I was hired for a job to produce a performance piece with Stage Art Performance Group. I also been doing exhibitions here. Except from that, I don't think that it's important in any way that is present for the viewer to see or for me that to reflect on.
Many of your pieces of work are based upon fiction, creating fictional characters or mythological characters and placing them in the midst of reality. Specifically speaking of your Mom and Jerry piece and the Daughters of Valhalla. Can you explain what these two character-based projects are attempting to illustrate or draw attention to in both the art world and today's circumstances?
Both of these projects that you're mentioning is a collaboration project with Monica Winter. We've been working with this method of role-playing. It's a way for us to communicate. All our projects are start out with this kind of building of characters. Mom and Jerry is a project that, in one way, it's a parody of artists as an outsider and a rebel. The artist that wants to criticize and stand on the outside, but also wants to be an insider somehow. Wants to gain success from being a rebel, showing the finger. Another part of it is we're kind of exploring the uncritical, consuming individual. So we're kind of going into that, exploring it by being in it somehow. The Daughters of Valhalla project is quite different. Or the starting point is Völuspá, which is the first and most well-known poem of the Poetic Edda, which is the myth of the creation and also the end of the world in Norse mythology. We've been trying to imagine this poem. The poem Völuspá means Völva's prophecy. The Völva was in Norse mythology a priestess, a kind of shamanistic figure who would give advice and also foresee the future for the gods. Völuspá is told by a Völva her memories from the early days and from the creation of the world, actually, and telling Odin, the highest god, we say that?
Zeus.
Right. Yeah, right, Zeus. She's telling him her of the early days of the world. She's foreseeing the death of a Christ-like god that will release the Ragnarok apocalypse. We've been imagining this, the roles of these Völvas in a contemporary setting. So we're kind of improvising, playing with the poem and trying to imagine it as or the Völva as a contemporary figure. We're working very intuitively also, so different works have come out of it. It's only in the beginning, actually, at the moment, so we made a video that's called The Giants of Yore, which is shown at the Ävla Konstcentrum right now. That's the first of a series of videos that we're planning. Yeah, we also have the Daughters of Valhalla, which we then imagine to be this kind of priestesses, but they're more like businesswomen traveling the world.
When investigating many of your works, themes such as oblivion and death are recurring. Can you explain how these themes have found themselves to be imperative to your art?
It's a part of life. I don't know exactly why it reoccurs in my work, almost all my work, in some way or another, but I've been thinking about why, but there's no like conceptual reason, at least.
You're a versatile artist who works using a variety of mediums and creative approaches. How do you go about making decisions as to what particular medium to use to express a specific idea that you have? For instance, is it mechanical, illogical, or more so intuitive and emotional?
When I started off as an art student, I was very much into working intuitively. I think when I work with Monica, we work very intuitively, but it's also it's a process where we work only on intuition, but then we change the process somehow. So there's new elements coming in, so we're deleting some of it, and then we have material to work with that maybe then we need a kind of conceptual framework at some point to go on with the process. We have found a way to work together where we start off with a material that we don't know what is at all. But we like it, we're curious about it. But then at some point we also maybe change the method a bit. When I work on my own, the last years I've been working more research-based than earlier, even if it's very intuitive compared to some artists. That at least for me, the work method has changed quite radically the last 3 years. I start working with some kind of material, and then I choose the medium.
How do others play into your art-making schematics? Are you more so a solitary creator, or do you find yourself more successful when collaborating with others?
I have two different art practices, actually. One with Monica, and one on my own. I also do collaborations with others, but they're minor. With Monica, we're always showing what's going on in the process to an audience. Somehow we're like continuously like presenting our ideas, and sometimes they're not so thought through. Sometimes they're more worked out, but the audience can kind of follow the process in the building of a project, which can go over several years. When I work on my own, I work very differently. I don't produce so much. I have periods where I'm isolated when I work on my own pieces, and they're also quite minimal in their outcome compared to the projects I do with Monica, which are it's performance and it's colorful and very messy sometimes. At least Mom and Jerry is very, it's a kind of overload of everything. When I do my individual work, it's more scaled down somehow.
If you were an art critic, can you have to describe your work to others? If you were forced to critically examine your work from an outside perspective, what do you think that you would say about it?
Being an art critic is something very different than being an artist, so it's very hard to imagine. It's an impossible question.
How much do outside influences such as politics, money, class, gender play into the outcome of your creative process?
I reflect on it in periods. I reflect on it quite a lot. And it's also my background, where I come from, part of a small town where there were most of my friends were in a less fortunate situation than me. And I was hanging out with a lot of kids that had quite serious problems, actually, with family and coping with school and life in general. Now, being in art school, where these differences seems to, like, everybody somehow has the same status, in a way, of having a position as an artist, which is, in Norway at least, you can call a privileged position. But of course it also has to do with money. It's like if you can go for a year or two without earning money because your parents are supporting you, or if you need funding, or if you have to have a work on the side to be able to produce art. I guess that I feel very privileged to be in a position where I can do what I'm most interested in. And I am very aware of the fact that I'm lucky to be in that position.
Every artist probably has a success story. Can you share with us yours regarding one artwork or event that turned out to be exactly like you wanted, maybe or even better? Or perhaps some other aspect of success, like a creation leading to a new opportunity that you didn't expect?
The first that comes into mind is Mom and Jerry. For a couple of years, we didn't exactly know what to do with it. We started working on it 5 years ago, and we were just playing around with the characters. We didn't exactly know what to do with them. We just found it very interesting ourselves, but we were doubting that it could be interesting for anyone else. We were invited to some events, and we also did some things on our own. We made some video pieces that we found interesting, but then it got quite hard to work on the project, so we were about to give up. But fortunately, some friends encouraged us to go on, and we kind of got through this kind of crisis. And then it kind of went on in a way that we didn't expect. We started to get quite a lot of attention on the projects we were invited to do performances and show our videos at exhibitions, and also to perform at the Österfärnlö Museum of Contemporary Art, where we had a very interesting interaction with the guards when we were not behaving properly. We had this dream of going to Ibiza with the project, and now we got funding, so we're kind of halfway there to make our dream come true, maybe next spring. So we're looking forward to that.
In contrast, do you have a story regarding a failed attempt or loss which you think is important to relay?
Not really. There's been some works that I've been showing that I felt that I didn't push myself through somehow, so I didn't get the outcome that I wanted. But they're not very important. It was a good experience, so knowing how to not get into that situation again.
What other artists, writers, or thinkers directly influence your creative process, especially thinking of contemporary examples?
Lately, or I don't know what lately really means. It means the last 2 years, maybe. The project I did for my master's was very influenced by The Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad, also Guy Debord, and The Society of the Spectacle.
Most artists consider the creative process to be personal and an intimate learning experience. What do you think that you have learned or that you're learning?
Actually, the last year I've been producing so much that I've been haven't really had time to let it or go through it. What's actually going on? I'm longing for some time now to sit back and just reflect on that.
I personally have lately been fascinated by the shady division between the real and the fake, between the sincere and the fraudulent. Art maker, curator, thinker, writer. It's a growing concern of mine when attempting to justify and pinpoint my own perspective, as well as perspectives of others whom I research. I think I crave authenticity, but I fear that on many levels it's some kind of chase that leads me to nowhere and to no one. No one and everyone are the owners of everything and nothing. What are your sentiments, if any, on fraudulence and authorship?
In periods, if I think too much about that, I get extremely angry, confused about what I'm doing, what it is in that connection. And when I just produce a lot, I don't have time to doubt so much what I'm doing. And I think that I prefer to be in that position of just always communicating and showing what's going on, like my ideas. I think I just have to do my thing and trust that in what I'm doing. And, because people are doing all sorts of good things and a lot of crap. I want to believe in what I'm doing somehow and not get paralyzed by the situation.
When considering the works of Oscar Wilde in his essay, The Decay of Lying, he says, "Life imitates art far more than art imitates life." In the essay, Wilde holds that such anti-mimesis results not merely from life's imitative instinct, but from the fact that the self-conscious aim of life is to find expression, and that art offers its certain beautiful forms through which it may realize that energy. Regarding your own practice, do you feel that life should imitate art, or is it the other way around? And can you give examples of your work which support this perspective?
I don't think so much about if art should be this or that.
If forced to describe your work using only 3 words, what would they be?
Black, comedy, excessive.
Going back to your project Mom and Jerry, you explain, Mom and Jerry consider themselves living nomadic pieces of art. They see their surroundings, wherever they are, as the stage for their everlasting protest and rebellion against established values, political correctness, and snobbery. As artists, provocateurs, and outsiders, Mom and Jerry attempts to criticize and mock the excluding, elitist, hierarchical structure of the high art machinery by acting out the privileged class's spoken and unspoken prejudices against the non-educated masses' perception of high culture. Mom and Jerry ridicules and questions the validity of the establishment's defined moral values, as well as the matter of good and bad taste. When considering the construction of these characters, how much are your own sentiments either about political correctness and high art reflected, or are these merely characters to be considered more so in their own encapsulating vacuum, unaffected by your own stance as either an insider or outsider artist?
I think that it's impossible to not bring my own ideas of what's high and low into it. In the project, or that I can see it from any objective angle, so it's very much about our idea of what's included and what's excluded. And since we're kind of mocking the idea that the artist can actually be an outsider if it wants to be an insider, I don't see myself as talking from an outside position.
Are you attempting to create a specific response or reaction in your viewer from the art that you create? Further, what reactions are you hoping for most of all from your observers?
It's very different from the different projects that I'm working on. I don't think too much about the specific reaction from a viewer. I hope, of course, that my work is communicating to some people, that some people are recognizing something in the work that makes sense to them, at least.
How much are you influenced by black or death metal ideologies which currently thrive in Scandinavia, if at all? I'm specifically thinking of your work in collaboration with Monica Winther on display in Gävle Konstcentrum's summer exhibition titled Om ljuset tar oss, or the English translation, If the Light Takes Us. Please explain your relationship to the occult as a phenomenon.
Our project, Daughters of Valhalla, which is present at the exhibition you're talking about, is about the Wall of Spore that I mentioned before. Some of the black metal bands have also been very interested, or they're very inspired by Norse mythology. So I think that's the meeting point, and also why we're using Bursum's music in one of our works. When it comes to occultism, I find it fascinating, but I don't have it's not very important for my work, or for that work either.
Many artists are attempting to answer a specific question or to solve a puzzle or an equation through their artistic process. Are you? And if so, please describe.
I can relate to the art practice as puzzling somehow, like as you can, that you're playing with ideas that can look like a puzzle that will never, there's always pieces missing somehow. I don't think that I'm trying to answer anything specifically or to make like a mathematical question that I want to finish, or what do you say?
Solve,
right.
If you could erase, fix, or destroy the presence of one real-life circumstance with your art, what would it be? In other words, if your art is a weapon, what is it fighting for or against?
I don't know. I don't see my art as a weapon. I think it's more about being in the world and looking at things, to pick up things and turn it around and ask questions and make other people, or invite other people into a dialogue.
What do you see yourself doing 20 years from now? Making art, or something else maybe?
I definitely see myself making art.
Thank you, Kjersti, for meeting with me today. Keep us posted on your new projects. Visit www.velvel.se for upcoming Cavalry Series podcasts. Thank you for listening.